Hello.
Hi.
I wasn't talking to you.
Whatever.
Thanks for tuning in again, after a pretty lengthy hiatus.
Sorry.
But here we are.
I'm gonna call this season two.
Season two, season 1.5.
Okay.
This is the back end of season one.
Okay.
Yeah. Before we show reruns all summer.
Woo!
Yeah. So, yeah, we're here. We're gearing up for episode number 27?
Six.
Six, right.
Episode six.
Okay. Alright, so, if I'm not mistaken, today we're going to be talking about history?
Like always.
Specifically, what part of history?
We're going to take a look at a classic kind of story, but basically in the 1920s. A story of a woman behind the man. The man, not the man. We're going to take a look at Ernest Hemingway's first wife, Hadley Richardson, and their marriage in life during Hemingway's Paris years in the early to mid-1920s.
Sounds fascinating.
It's very fascinating.
Well, okay. Without further delay,
ready to go?
Here we go.
All right. Let's go to 1920s Paris on the Nerdstorian.
Nerdstorian.
Okay, so, how much do you know about, like, Hemingway, William?
Not much beyond, you know, the books that I've read.
Right.
And, you know, Midnight in Paris was a great movie.
Yes, I do love those scenes with him.
Although I hear that was an actor.
Yeah, he's been dead for a while.
The actor?
No, the Hemingway.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Well, our focus isn't necessarily just about Hemingway. Hemingway is very important in this story. But everybody talks about how Hemingway was at his best in the early to mid-1920s before he became Papa. And there's a reason behind that. A woman named Hadley. And we're going to take a look at her today. So.
Well, not her.
Yeah.
Because she's dead, too.
Okay, we're going to talk about her today. How's that sound?
It's good.
All right. So,
Mulligan.
When you think about the 1920s, you think about sophisticated flapper women with their bobbed hair doing the Charleston
on top of a flagpole with Al Capone.
Simpsons reference. But Hadley was kind of the, I would call her the anti-flapper, which is what a lot of people found great in her. And so let me go back. Hadley was born in November 1891, specifically November 9th, 1891, the youngest of four children to James and Florence Richardson in St. Louis, Missouri. She had two siblings that were a lot older than her, James Jr. and Dorothea, and a sister who was a lot closer in age to her, Fanny. Remember that name. Fanny is going to kind of cause her some issues later.
Fanny.
Her dad was, you know, the son of a very successful businessman. He was a slacker, though. Upper middle class, could never really get with it. And her mother she was a suffragette, but she was also kind of called uptight, man-hating. She thought sex should only be used for procreation, if that at all.
Yeah.
She did not like sex at all. And some people believe that was because she might have been molested as a child. But she was kind of a bully to everybody. Their early years of their marriage were fine with their two older children, but things just got a little harder for them as they went on. And especially after Hadley's father, James, started having money trouble. So much money trouble that, Hadley's father killed himself in their house. So that's a big deal in Hadley's transformation. She, her parents, well, not her parents, her mother basically put all of her frustrations onto Hadley after her father, after James, the father, died. So, when Hadley was a girl, she had some issues with illness, or at least that's what she thought she did. She did fall out of a window when she was like 6.
She fell out of a window.
She fell out of a second story window waving at like the gardener or something. I can't remember. And she survived, obviously, but they kind of use this, her mother and her sister Fawny use this against her later in life. Like, she was always the invalid, have to be put in bed and stuff like that. She was really close to her oldest sister, Dorothea, though. Dorothea was about 11 years older than her. She had gotten married and gone off and had, you know, a family. But she was always coming around to see Hadley, loving on her, telling her she was wonderful. And Hadley was a very spirited little girl. She had really bright red hair that was curly. She was very pretty. Her sister Fawny, who was 2 years older than her, on the other hand, very dull when they were children, and liked to pick on her little sister. But Dorothea was the best. Dorothea was beautiful, smart, dedicated young woman. But sadly, when Hadley was a teenager, Dorothea had an accident. Something in the yard caught on fire, and Dorothea, who was about 8 months pregnant at the time, went out to put out the fire, and her stockings and the bottom of her robe caught fire, and she was burned severely from the waist down. Like, the next day she gave birth to a stillborn girl, and everybody thought that she was gonna be fine. And Hadley and Fawny and their mother had been off on vacation in Maine or something, Maine or Massachusetts. And they get news, they get a phone call, very expensive phone call, from Dorothea's husband saying Dorothea just suddenly died, had a severe infection that just killed her immediately.
Stop, drop, and roll, kids.
Yeah, it was devastating. This kind of started Hadley's problems with depression. Never as severe as like other people in her family, but she had some issues with depression. In fact, Hadley was afraid of water, and she actually made somebody row her out into a storm onto the ocean, cause they're at the shore, not caring if she drowned after she found out her beloved older sister had died. This really put a strain on, everybody. Her mother quit being a suffragette, she dropped a lot of the things. She started becoming more of a spiritualist. She, Fawny got colder towards Hadley, and Hadley just couldn't quite get with it. She actually had to stay a year behind in school and didn't graduate with her friends. And then at one point where she just was like, I gotta get out of here, she decides to go off to Bryn Mawr because it was away from her mother. Mm. And it was a terrible, terrible venture.
Where's Bryn Mawr?
I believe it's in Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. Mm. Can't remember. She has an aunt. She had an aunt there. And she goes there and she just does not like it. She hates it. And she comes home. So Hadley comes home. Her sister, Fawny, is becoming a society girl at this point. She has turned into a beautiful woman. She's this speaker for women's suffrage. And she gets married to this young, very handsome, well, Hadley thought he was very handsome, but very bright young professor, history professor, who Fonny basically treats like crap their entire marriage. Fonny has mental issues, though. She actually has a nervous breakdown a couple times. So does her husband.
Cray-cray.
Yeah, very cray-cray. But Hadley was basically just under her mother's thumb for many years. She couldn't, she couldn't like even go on a date. She'd have men come and take her out and they'd go and sit on the porch and her mother was always there watching. Remember, her mom hates sex. So she didn't really like the idea of her daughter dating. And this happened for many, many years. Her mother was saying, oh, you're crazy, darling. No man's going to want you. Or you're too sick, darling. No man's going to want you. And at one point, Hadley just thought that was true. She didn't have a life. And this went on until she was in her, you know, late 20s. She was like 27, 28 years old when finally she was free. Her mother passed away after a lengthy illness fighting, I think it was Blight's disease or Bite's disease. I can't remember exactly what it's called. But her mother passed away and Hadley suddenly could do what she wanted. Her sister, she was living with her sister at the time. Her sister was just like, no, you can't, you shouldn't be doing this stuff. And in fact, I think she wanted her to be the old maiden aunt to the children, and which Hadley adored her nieces and nephews, but Hadley wanted her own life. So she decided she was going to have her own life. She basically turned the upstairs of the house into an apartment where she lived and her sister and her family lived below. And she rented out rooms to women that she knew in St. Louis. And this was around 1920. So women were starting to become, you know, a bigger deal. She had, you know, more freedom. They had just gotten the right to vote. And she decides, or was about to get the right to vote, she decides she's going to go visit some friends in Chicago. This is a big deal. Chicago is everything. Now she goes to Chicago, stays with a friend, and she meets this dashing young man that all the girls, especially her best, like one of her really close friends, Kate, is in love with. All the girls just think he's this beautiful young man. He calls himself a war hero. He walks around the apartment in an Italian captain's cape. And it is none other than
a cape.
Ernest Hemingway.
Wearing a cape.
Yes. Ernest Hemingway is, gosh, he's about to be 21 years old. So he's just really young. And he starts making eyes at Hadley. Yes. Here's the issue. Hadley is about 8 years older than him. So she thinks, oh, what's this kid want with me kind of thing. But they immediately just fall in love. She becomes alive when they start talking to each other and hanging out with each other. They're very chaste. Nothing serious. They go out. You know, they do drink the bootleg liquor that everybody has. This is Chicago in 1920, people. But she is just in love with him. Just a little background about Ernest. He's the second child, born July 21st, 1899, to the Hemingway family, a doctor, and his overbearing wife as well. So similarities between the two. They actually do find a lot of similarities between the two. Both have very overbearing mothers who have to be the center of attention. Ernest hates his mother. Hadley doesn't really hate her mother, but she was under her mother's thumb for so long. And so Hadley goes home to St. Louis, where they immediately start writing each other. And this was a big deal because at this time, because of airplanes, mail was moving faster. So she could drop a letter and it would get there the next day at some point. So they would know when they were writing to each other. So they wrote these beautiful letters. They also tried to make each other jealous throughout the entire one. And so talk about this girl he met in this emerald flapper's dress. And she would talk about this man who took her to a party. You know, they would try to, and why are you hurting me? That kind of thing. It was a very melodramatic love story. And some of the stuff you actually see in his later stories. He wants to be a writer. He's currently working for a magazine / newspaper that ends up being, well, the editor / owner ends up being sued for embezzlement. So that folded after a while. But they just love each other. All the while, though, he's keeping the secret that, well, her best friend, well, one of her best friends, Kate Smith, is in love with him. She's also a lot older than Ernest, like Hadley is. But they've known each other since Ernest was a little boy. She didn't fall in love with Ernest until Ernest came back from World War I, when he was a man at that point. And they had to get over that very quickly. So all the while they're writing letters to each other, Ernest is going, oh, I want to go to Italy. It's cheap there. I'm going to write there, blah, blah, blah. And Hallie's like, oh, that's great. You should go to Italy, but I'm really going to miss you while you're gone. And they're like, well, why don't you come with me? We'll get married. So that's how they get engaged. And she gets engaged. Ernest starts lying about his age when they meet people. He tells everybody he's 30. So that Hadley won't really seem like she's just this old woman marrying this kid. And she turns 29. He turns 21. And they meet his family, Grace, who Hadley for some reason hates, even though Grace is really nice to her. And they to start trying to plan their future. He's trying to decide whether or not to go to Italy. They're trying to save up money and buy Lear so they can go to Italy. And all the while his friend / idol, Sherwood Anderson, who is becoming a popular writer at that point, is telling him, no, you shouldn't go to Italy. Italy's played out, whatever. So they get married in September of 1921, September 3rd, 1921. And they decide, to rent this little tiny crappy apartment in Chicago. His job at the, newspaper goes under because of the, embezzlement. And he's just like, ah, forget it. Okay. Well, we're going to leave. Luckily, Hadley's uncle dies and leaves her some money.
Yay.
So they're trying to decide, okay, let's go to Italy, let's go to Rome. And Sherwood Anderson's like, no, you have to go to Paris. It's cheap in Paris. That's where all the expatriates are going. You have to go to Paris. So they go to Paris. And this is when basically the great days of Ernest Hemingway is when he's in Paris. They arrive in Paris. It is winter. It is cold. They come with letters of introduction from Sherwood to these literary people in Paris. When they arrive in Paris, though, Hemingway does not immediately go out and try to seek these people that he has letters of introduction. He's actually very shy. He's like, why would any of these people want to talk to me? He manages to finagle a job from the Toronto Star, a newspaper in the city of Toronto, to be their European correspondent. So he is basically getting paid to write all these stories, news stories, personal stories, to send back to Toronto. And they get this little tiny crappy apartment that they love. They always talk about above a music hall where like the roughest people go, like whores and drunk sailors and people fight and stuff.
Booze.
Yes. But they love it. It's like music because you hear the music and they're drinking every night. They drink at lunch. They drink at tea time. They drink at dinner. They drink after dinner. They're just drunk Hadley is making up for lost time, to be honest. They spend their first Christmas there. They're miserable. They get sick. It's just crap. And then they decide to go try to meet others. So here are some of the people Hemingway meets. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ezra Pound. He becomes basically a student of Ezra Pound. Gertrude Stein is basically his mentor until he becomes too famous. He talks about seeing James Joyce eating in Paris restaurants with his huge family. They always make his Celtic crew, people call it. They always make fun that he has a new kid every time he shows up at a place.
Celtic crew for life.
Yes. They're meeting all these amazing people. They're kind of depressed. Ernest goes to visit, goes on an assignment to cover some economic conference in Switzerland. Hadley's alone for the first time without him since their marriage. She's just miserable. She hangs out with Gertrude Stein and her partner, Alice. Hemingway always wondered, because Gertrude is kind of short, had long brown hair that she'd always piled on top of her head, and huge chest. And he always tried to figure out how much each breast weighed, because they were so big. It's the only woman he ever listened to. I'll just say that. But
it's because of the boobies.
No, it was because she was a lesbian and didn't give a crap. but she didn't fall under his charm. He would rent a little office and write. Hadley was just depressed all the time, though. They were homesick. And they decided, Ernest decides to take her skiing. So they go skiing. They're happy. It makes them so wonderfully, happy with Europe. They come back to Paris. They spend some time in Paris. It gets depressing again. So they decide to go back to Switzerland and meet up with one of his friends. And one of my favorite stories from hearing about this is when Ernest, Hadley, and his friend Chink from his years in World War I, who was a Irish-British military guy, they decide they're going to go hiking into Italy from Switzerland through the St. Bernard Pass. Here's the funny thing. Hadley wanted to be cute. So she decided, instead of wearing hiking boots, she was going to wear her nice new tan Oxford loafers or whatever, made by Abercrombie & Fitch. Did not know they existed back then. To go hiking through the St. Bernard's Pass. This is where the St. Bernard dogs come from. There's a reason why you don't go. But the thing was, it wasn't open yet for spring. So they're hiking through snow. They actually see the grave sites of these hikers that don't make it. Ernest is sick. Hadley is basically drug into town. The last leg of the journey, and her shoes actually have to be slit open so she could, because her feet were so swollen. It was a great time because they got to see all this stuff. She actually went to the St. Bernard Monastery and actually stumbled on the living quarters of the monks. And she said, "I was probably the first woman to set foot in that hallway for the last several hundred years." Because everybody just like panicked, because she opened the door and she went, "Oh," and all these heads just popped out of these little doors. Yeah. Like, what's this girl doing here?
It's a woman.
Oh no, run. So when they get to Italy, Ernest takes her around. He writes about all this stuff too in biographical sketches, about how all the parts of like Italy he fought, he was in as an ambulance driver. They go back to Paris. She cuts her hair off. She had this long, beautiful hair, and she decided to bob it. And she never liked it for the rest of her life, but she always was like, "I gotta cut my Victorian values," and so she cut her hair off. Ernest goes to Greece, though. He is sent to Greece to cover the war between the Turks and the Greeks. this is probably one of the first times he is unfaithful to Hadley while he's over there, but he's miserable over there. You know, he's in the middle of a evacuation at one point, seeing people dying and running for their lives. And he returns to, they had this huge fight before he left, and he returns to Paris, sick, thin, just looking haggard. And that makes it up. So there, meanwhile, he gets back to Paris. He starts writing again. And Hadley is just making time, you know. She meets people. She becomes friends with some rich people. And, you know, they're just having a grand old time. But what ends up happening is that Ernest is producing all this amazing writing. He is trying to be very careful. Every time he types on the main paper, and he always has a carbon copy sheet in between. So he has two copies of his writing, and he keeps it in a cupboard, the extra copies, so that he always has a copy of his work. He's already working on his first novel. He has a book of short stories published.
Would that be in our time?
I believe so. Mm-hmm. Either it's during this time or after this time. He gets this great assignment to go cover a peace conference in Geneva, and he gets there and he finds a way to get Hadley to come to be with him, because she's always miserable when he goes off on these assignments. So she decides, oh, I'm going to bring some of his work so he can work on his writing while he's in Geneva. This is the lost briefcase. Have you heard of the lost briefcase?
No.
It is considered one of the saddest things to happen in literary history. She decides to bring his work, but not only does she bring the original copies, she brings the carbon copies as well. Every single bit of writing he has written in Paris is in this briefcase. She gets on the train. She sets the briefcase down. She gets off the train to go get like some food. Gets back on the train. The briefcase is gone. Everything is gone. Someone stole it. She gets the police to look for it in the train station, and they can't find it. They let, you know, leave your name. We'll forward it. She gets on another train because her train left. She gets on another train, meets Ernest in Geneva, and tells him what happened. And then he has to start over. When he's whining about this to Gertrude Stein later, he's like very upset. Obviously, it's all his work. It's like me going and deleting every single bit of music you've ever recorded. Yeah. Or deleting all your writings. But when he tells Gertrude Stein all about this, she goes, it was crap anyway. Start over. And he produces some wonderful writings. He actually, the short stories, I do believe, come from after The Lost Briefcase, because he has to start over. He starts writing again. He starts becoming noticed. They go on another trip, and it's causing another problem in their relationship, because they go on another trip, and, well, Ernest has a notebook marked Hadley, and it's about Hadley's menstruation, so they don't get pregnant. And they have this new thing called a diaphragm.
Ah, the numbers game.
Well, they also have the new sexual contraceptive, the diaphragm, because they hate condoms. Because condoms were really rough back then and full of holes. They were. They were made of rubber. That's why they're called rubbers. But she forgets her diaphragm in Paris when they go on this trip. And he gets really upset, like, oh gosh, but he's a guy, they still have sex. And they find out they're pregnant. They're like, okay. He's like, I'm too young to be a dad. And she's like, well, I'm getting too old. She's like 31 at this point. That's deal with it. So they do. He decides, okay, just let me do this stuff. I want to do some things before we have a baby. So they go to Pamplona to see the running of the bulls. And this begins his obsession with this. She is a star among the matadors there. This one matador, Niacor, who is the star of the bullfighting. He is just mesmerized by her. He is also a young man like Ernest, and he is mesmerized by her. He cuts off like the ear of a bull. He slays and gives it to Hadley, and that's like a very big deal. It was an honor. And, you know, asks her to dance and stuff, but she, you know, she's pregnant. They're happy. The baby is growing, and Ernest is just becoming obsessed. He actually does the running of the bulls because, you know, gotta do what I gotta do kind of thing. And he, well, they're just happy, and they decide, you know what? The baby's coming. Let's go back to Toronto. Or let's go to Toronto. Don't want to go to the United States. Toronto's cheaper. And Toronto has better hospitals than Paris. Paris still did a lot of home births there. Europe was still known for home birth, just like what happened in Downton Abbey. It's around the same time. And they go to Toronto in October to have their baby. And Ernest becomes a local newspaper writer again for the Toronto Star while he's in Toronto. They have the baby, Baby Bumby, John Hemingway.
Baby Bumby.
Or Jack Hemingway. But they call him Bumby because he's like a little teddy bear. They said he's like a little bear. He's so like stout and cute and stuff. So they call him Baby Bumby. He's born October 10th, 1923. Ernest is not there because his jerk of an editor sent him off to cover some stupid story in New York, even though he's like, my wife is due any second now. So he misses the baby's birth, but baby's fine. Hallie's fine. And they go back to their little apartment in Toronto, and then winter sets in. They're saying, we're going to wait till Bumby is a year old before we go back to Paris. That doesn't work. Ernest is miserable. Hadley is miserable. And so they decide to risk it. They decide to leave like December or January and with Baby Bumby in tow and go back to Paris. This is the beginning of the end, sadly. Mm. The dominoes start changing. They go back to Paris. Ernest becomes an editor for the Transatlantic Review. They go back to Pamplona again. They love Pamplona. He writes about it. He meets these sisters, the Pfeiffer sisters. Remember that name? The Pfeiffer sisters. And he decides to go back to Pamplona with this big group of people, including, the people who are going to inspire The Sun Also Rises.
Did they in fact see the running of the bulls?
Yes.
Because that really pissed me off in the book. The book is, for me, it was not an easy read. Mm-hmm. It's very dry.
Right.
And the whole thing is leading up to the running of the bulls.
Right.
And then, like, on the day of, Hemingway's surrogate in the story just wakes up and he's like, oh, shit, what time is... I guess I've missed it.
Yeah.
And that's it. That, I mean, that's...
Well, he goes with this group of, like, British and American expats to go see... He wants... Because he talks about it all the time. He tells, his buddy Chink. He tells John Dos Passos, who ends up marrying Kate Smith from his earlier relationship later. He tells... Donald Ogden Stewart, who becomes a comedy writer, and they go and they have a good time in 1924. But when they go back in 1925, the following year, he brings these other people, like one of his best friends, Bill Smith, who's Kate's brother, Ogden Stewart again, and then this recently divorced Lady Duff Twisden, and her lover Pat Guthrie. And Harold Leob, who is in love with her, too. Duff, Harold, and Pat are the inspirations for Brett. Duff is Brett Ashley.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Harold is Robert Cohn. Mm. And Pat is Mike. And based on what I've read about them, they are people that he just didn't really like. Except he did like Duff a little bit. He kind of wanted to sleep with Duff, but she didn't sleep with him. So he begins writing what becomes The Sun Also Rises. Starting writing it on his birthday, when he turns 26, he finishes in eight weeks, the first draft. It was going to be called Fiesta, and then it was going to be called The Lost Generation, and then they decide to go take a break. He was going to bring his book with him, though. They decide at Christmas that they're going to go visit this place they love, Schruns, Austria, with Baby Bumby, and they're there, and they his short stories had already been published. He was becoming known. At this point, they're becoming known to the Fitzgeralds. F. Scott Fitzgerald is already famous. He actually just had that year in 1925, The Great Gatsby published. And Hadley is like, this is a really great book. Ernest, you have to read this book. And Ernest is like, I hate that guy. He's a lush. He might be a homosexual. And that wife of his is crazy. And then he reads the book and he's like, damn, that book is really good. They have a love-hate relationship with each other. So they go, and one of the Pfeiffer sisters decides to join them in January, Pauline. He is with a certain publisher that's been really good with him, and Pauline was like, oh no, you gotta sign with Scribner's. You know, they publish Fitzgerald. They like you. I know people there, too. We can get you. And so he breaks his contract and goes to Scribner's. She goes to the United States, or is heading back to the United States. Hemingway decides he's going to go back to the United States to go meet with the publishers. And both of them end up making, both he and Pauline end up making a stop in Paris at the same time. And, that's when they start their affair. It's the affair, the big one. Which is sad because Pauline and Hadley are best friends. Pauline's always trying to get her to dress nicer. She loves them. She's like, they're the perfect family. And they carry on for a while. Until they decide to go on a trip. Pauline's sister, decide they're going to go on a biking trip. And Pauline is just kind of a jerk the entire time to poor Hadley. And finally, Pauline's sister is just like, okay, you have to tell her. And Pauline says, I'm having an affair with your husband.
Oops.
Dun, dun, dun. And of course, Hadley has to confront Ernest. He's like, but I love you both. Can we just make this work? All the other artists are doing this. Pound is doing this. Everybody's doing this. You know, open marriages. She's like, fine, I'll try. She is miserable the entire time. All the while, Pauline is just like, come on, Ernest. You know you want to marry me, Ernest. Meanwhile, saying, I'm so sorry. People believe that because she was Catholic, she had this Catholic guilt thing saying, well, this affair would be okay if I get him to divorce his wife and marry me, then obviously this is fine. So Hadley and Pauline and Ernest kind of live in this menage a trois. Not as sexy as it sounds.
A triangle of love.
It's definitely a triangle of love. She's miserable and she finally says, enough, I can't do this anymore. She leaves Ernest. The Sun Also Rises is published. Ernest does the honorable thing by making sure all the royalties go to Hadley and their son, Jack. So even still to this day, Jack's family gets the royalties for The Sun Also Rises. He, in fact, dedicates the book to Hadley and Jack. And he tries to reconcile with Hadley because he's in love with, still loves Hadley a lot, but not enough to break it off with Pauline. she decides, you know, she's going to put him to a test. Like, you guys can't see each other for 100 days. And she's like, well, that's kind of cruel. I'll let you guys go. And so she ends up letting him go. They divorce. And she floats around for a while and ends up getting remarried in 1933 to her husband that she is married to from 1933 till, I believe, his death in the late 70s or her death in the late 70s. She lives until 1977. She and Ernest talk to each other the entire time. They write letters to each other. And she watches as he becomes this different person because of his alcoholism and becomes somebody that she doesn't know anymore. But throughout the entire time, he's writing to her. They're talking about Paris, talking about how he's just not as happy anymore. Those years were great. Why couldn't we have still had those years? That kind of thing. And he begins writing his biographical novel about his Paris years called A Movable Feast, in which Hadley is viewed very nicely in it. And the reason they taught that Hadley is important is that a lot of literary historians, literary critics who obsess over Hemingway, who study Hemingway, a lot of them believe that she had such an influence on those early years. She was his cheerleader in Paris, always telling him, oh, you're a brilliant writer. You can do this. You're amazing. I believe in you. I'll do anything for you. She even, you know, he thought she was a talented piano player, but she was like, no, I'm nothing compared to your writing, that kind of thing. She's everywhere in his stories. And even in The Sun Also Rises, she's not a character in The Sun Also Rises, but he says that she's just everywhere in that book because she was there in Pamplona. She is the one who kept him grounded, the one who made him into a writer. But once he got successful, it's kind of like she was outgrown. But he always said he would have rather had died than have hurt just Hadley the way he did. Stop loving her. There was always, in his later years, regret for how things ended with Hadley. Because he was married 3 more times after Hadley. He married Pauline. Had 2 sons with her. That didn't last. He then married a reporter who was also from St. Louis. And Hadley actually remember seeing her as a little girl in a dance recital. They divorce. I think, like, she leaves him because she's like, I want to be a war reporter. I don't want to be tied down. She's the one that in the movie with Clive Owen and Nicole Kidman.
I don't know that movie.
Came out last year.
Oh.
It was like an HBO movie. It was about his relationship with her. She was like a war correspondent. And then he married his last wife, who was the editor of A Movable Feast. And he, because it was published 3 years after his death. But he and Hadley were talking up until the end.
As I understand it, he led a full happy life.
Until
he died, right?
Yeah, sort of.
I'm joking. He shot himself in the head.
He was miserable half the time. But what's interesting about Hemingway, just to say that, because, Hadley's father killed himself. Ernest's father killed himself. Ernest had another sibling kill herself.
It's tradition.
And she was always worried about that. Also, Hadley remembers him having nightmares from his years at war. He, when he got home from Italy and at the end of World War I, he couldn't sleep with the lights off. His sister, who was close in age to him, would have to come and sit with him until he fell asleep, and then she would stay in bed with him because he would wake up in the middle of the night screaming. Hadley did the same thing, you know, having to keep him at bay. He always had these dark moments when they were married. You know, they were married when he was in his early to mid-20s, so he was a young guy. But yeah, their son ends up having a pretty good life. He's married. He gets married. Jack gets married in 1949, I believe, to his wife, Puck, who they're married until, like, 1988. when Puck dies. Jack dies in 2000. She has famous granddaughters. Muriel Hemingway is her granddaughter. That's Jack's youngest. And then Margot, who was the model, who died. But again, that was another tragic thing right there, too. It's like Margot kept the Hemingway curse going because she died of like an overdose. Because I think it was one of Hemingway's sisters, I think, died that way, too. But Hadley had a great life. Very happy with her second husband, Paul Mower, who was a man she met, a journalist she met during their Paris years. She lived a long time. She gave, talked to people. She kind of laughed at a movable feast. It wasn't really all like that. It was very, rose-colored glasses. But she always maintained that Ernest was her first great love, and she was always going to love him and stuff. So, and a lot of people say after he divorced Hadley, his writing wasn't ever as good. But you also saw her in later writings. A lot of the stuff they taught, like quotes of theirs, he said in like A Farewell to Arms, he got from things she said in letters. So even though it was slightly based on his first girlfriend during World War One, but he achieved greatness with her. And sadly, that cost him everything, because he not only did he, lose his wife, he also lost his mentors, because he decided to just burn all the bridges of everybody who said he was a great writer and helped him become a great writer. Stein, he threw a typewriter at her one time out of a window. Pound, he...
I thought it was the other way around.
Maybe it was. I can't remember the story.
Oh, great.
Somebody threw a typewriter. I love Kathy Bates playing her in Midnight in Paris. He burns his first bridge, Sherwood Anderson. He writes a satirical parody, a horrible parody of one of Sherwood Anderson's great books. That was just like, everybody was going, Ernest, you shouldn't publish this, except for Pauline. Pauline was going, oh, you should publish this. This is great. And it was panned, and Sherwood was pissed. And he, pissed off Gertrude, pissed off Ezra. He became, but more, he became Papa. Papa is not a good thing. And if you look at pictures of him when they got married versus pictures of him when they were like young, a few years later, you can see the different problems, and you'll see that on Tumblr. I'll put that up on Tumblr. But like by the time he's in his mid-20s, he's starting to become that stern face, mustache version of himself, the Papa version. Although some people say they lost all that. And you can see, and I'll put this up, I'm showing Will, but he's a baby. He looks so cute, right? And then, 3 years later, he's becoming this alcoholic thing. So. But Hadley is interesting because she goes from this woman, this girl who everybody's like putting down, to this woman who stands up to Hemingway for his crap and calls him out on his crap and all this stuff. So, but that's Hadley Richardson. There's a great book called Paris Without End that I love. I've read it so many times. That's the biography about Hadley Richardson.
Who's the author of that book?
The author of that book is Carla... Oh, gosh, what's her last name? Hand me my book. Carla Dilberto, or Diliberto, something. Diliberto. The reason I got into this subject, though, was, I want to be honest, it's a fiction book, historical fiction book, The Paris Wife by Patricia McLean. it was a great, it's a great book, and it got me interested. I read it the same year that, Midnight in Paris came out, so I might be on a 1920s kick for a while. So, all right, well, it's good to be back.
Yep.
Well, podcast listeners, that's it for now. I hope you enjoyed our little jaunt into 1920s Paris. If you go on to the Tumblr, it's our new blog site. We're going to just use WordPress for our podcast postings, and Tumblr is going to be like to see pictures, information, extra information. I might write some extra information about Hadley that I wasn't able to put into the podcast. That is, the Tumblr is nerdstorian.tumblr.com. You can still follow us on Twitter. I'm at nerdstorian. Will is at Will Winchester, I-M-C-H-E-S-T-E-R. Or you can follow the podcast at nerdstoriancast. Also, I've started an Instagram. You can find us at Nerdstorian on Instagram.
Live pictures of stuff that happened in history.
Yes, totally live pictures.
From our journeys through space and time.
Yes, because we're Doctor Who. No, we're Inspector Space Time.
Yeah.
Yes. So, until next time, podcast listeners.
Don't die.
Have a great one.
Try not to fall out of any windows.
All right. Bye.